Welcome to Disrespect, exploring the stigma around disability, providing information and interviews to entertain and challenge listeners who care about, or care for, or may themselves have become someone with a disability. We have with us today Dr. Douglas Lee, the lead author of the CCORT study on cardiovascular outcomes. Welcome to the show.
Thank you.
Now, what is your position?
I'm a cardiologist with University Health Network.
Okay.
And probably more appropriately, a research fellow at the Institute for Clinical Evaluative Sciences.
In Toronto?
In Toronto, and also a research fellow at the Framingham Heart Study in Massachusetts.
All right. Your studies uncovered something detrimental to heart patients that probably you didn't anticipate. It's your hypothesis that high-risk patients got the appropriate medication. But as it turns out, your study revealed something completely different. This is a wide-ranging study established for other reasons than to discover the results we're about to talk about, which are the withholding, whether it's inadvertent or not, of advanced cardiac medication from the most serious patients.
Intuitively, when we set out to do this analysis, we thought that intuitively that one would expect that if there was a higher risk of dying, that the higher risk patients would be more likely to receive these treatments, which have been shown to prolong life.
As you've mentioned, elderly patients and patients at higher risk are less likely to receive advanced treatment.
Yes.
You didn't anticipate this.
There existed studies in the literature to show that, for example, that coronary angiography or invasive cardiac procedures are less likely to be performed in the elderly.
Oh, yeah.
And that in some cases, certain therapies, such as thrombolytic therapies for heart attacks, are less likely to be used in the elderly.
When you talk about thrombolytic therapies, you're talking about blood thinning?
Clot-busting drugs that are used at the time that an acute heart attack happens.
Okay. Why would they be less often used in the elderly? They have side effects?
Probably a concern about side effects.
Okay.
It may be a concern that elderly patients were not the patients that were typically studied in randomized trials.
Yeah.
And the randomized controlled trials were where certain individuals were given the study drug and certain individuals were given placebo.
Right.
And the intervention was blinded, both the physician and the patient.
Right.
Have typically looked at younger and relatively healthier individuals than currently exist in the community.
Okay.
And so part of this may be that the randomized trial evidence may not directly translate in physicians' minds to giving these therapies that could potentially be harmful to elderly patients.
Oh, I see. So because they haven't been studied as thoroughly, the physicians might be more reluctant.
Correct.
Oh, okay. Tell us about the study and tell us about the outcome and further hypothesis that you have for study that have emerged from what you found.
The present study was published in JAMA, and we looked at heart failure, which is a condition which affects a large segment of the population, which has also been predicted to affect 1 in 5 individuals over their lifetime.
Right.
We looked at the treatment of heart failure patients.
Yes.
And we looked at it in a slightly different way than previous studies.
Okay.
A lot of previous studies look at overall treatment rates in all heart failure patients in aggregate. However, we looked at treatment rates according to risk, and age was a major factor that was calculated into the determination of risk. We looked at heart failure patients who were admitted to a hospital in Ontario and looked at their treatment patterns according to what their predicted and actual observed risks of dying in the next year were, and looked at their treatment rates for receiving treatment with beta blockers and angiotensin-converting enzyme inhibitors,
right,
which are two classes of drugs that have been shown to reduce mortality
in heart
failure patients.
Beta blockers are drugs that slow down your heartbeat and decrease your blood pressure as a result, and angiotensin-converting enzyme inhibitors are drugs that tend to dilate and stabilize the diameter of blood vessels, correct?
That's correct. They have a number of effects, both on the vasculature and also in the heart itself.
Okay.
We developed a model to predict what's going to happen to a heart failure patient once they arrive at the hospital. What is the likelihood that they will have a fatal event within 1 year or within 30 days?
Okay.
We then used this method and looked at treatment rates according to their risks.
Right.
The risk prediction method involves a number of factors, including their presentation clinical features, laboratory tests, but also a prominent factor in predicting outcome was the age at the time that that the heart failure developed.
Right.
Older patients are more likely to die at within 30 days and within a year of their heart failure onset.
Yeah.
Using this risk score, when we looked at the treatment rates according to their risk, we found that the predicted risk correlated pretty well with actually what happened with their observed mortality rate.
So first of all, the tools that you developed and shown to be accurate were doubly verified to be accurate for purposes of founding another study, this study.
Correct.
All right.
Then we looked at, within all the heart failure patients that were hospitalized in Ontario, we identified patients who had a low left ventricular ejection fraction.
What's that mean?
That's a abnormal heart pumping function.
Okay.
And also did not have some of the comorbidities that would typically exclude people from being included into randomized trials. We tried to identify patients in the community who would potentially be patients that might be included in those randomized trials of ACE inhibitors and beta blockers.
Right. So you're looking for people for whom ACE inhibitors and beta blockers might constitute a fairly full and complete health treatment at the time of the study, people whose diagnosis were complicated by the need for other drugs or the penalty for not including other drugs in their regimen at the time of the trial.
It's partly correct. Although we couldn't tease out a set of individuals that didn't require any other drug therapy, we did identify individuals that didn't have the low left ventricular ejection fraction, for example, was a inclusion criterion in the heart failure trials.
Okay.
And so we identified a subset of individuals in Ontario who were hospitalized for heart failure with low left ventricular ejection fraction, a very important inclusion criteria for the randomized trials.
All right, and why was it very important?
There are basically two types of heart failure. One type of heart failure is called systolic dysfunction.
Mm-hmm.
That's where the heart may have been damaged from, let's say, a prior heart attack,
right,
does not pump normally.
Yep.
Another type of heart failure is diastolic heart failure, in which the heart may be stiff or may not relax normally.
Oh.
But the pump function is preserved.
Okay.
That particular subgroup of heart failure, the diastolic heart failure group, has not been well studied in randomized trials.
All right.
However, the systolic heart failure group has been studied in numerous trials. Beta blockers and ACE inhibitors have been shown to have significant benefit in a number of such trials.
And so this was the group that you studied?
Yes.
The systolic group?
That's the type of patient that we studied, yes.
Okay. How long did the study take?
All of the individuals were, the data on these individuals were collected over a span of, it must be about 4 years from planning the actual design to the final data collection phase.
It's a very thorough study from the perspective of how long medical studies often take. I mean, I know some track people for almost a generation, but they're very unusual studies, and most don't go as long as yours, do they?
Yes, it was because the scale of the study was to try to get a sample of heart failure patients across the Ontario population you know, it did require a significant amount of time to collect all the data.
So when your study was done, how long did it take to process the data and come up with these surprising conclusions?
After the data collection process, you know, it took a number of years to actually develop the predictive models, and then a couple of years after that to actually do the analyses.
All right, and what, in brief, did the study report?
So we found that patients who were at higher risk of dying were actually paradoxically less likely to receive treatments with these classes of drugs.
I've had a chance to review at least the side effects of these drugs, and forgive me, I'm not a doctor, but they don't seem like there are often serious side effects from them. What would prevent people from being prescribed them?
Well, you know, there aren't an extensive list of severe side effects.
There's respiratory side effects from ACE inhibitors.
Yeah, there's the ones that are of concern are abnormal worsening kidney function.
Oh, I see.
In patients who are treated with ACE inhibitors, and low blood pressure. All of these medications reduce blood pressure, and so if the blood pressure before starting treatment is low to begin with, there might be a concern that starting these medications could actually even further lower the blood pressure.
Is the low blood pressure the thing that's connected with the kidney problems?
That's a good question. Potentially could be in that the kidneys would require an adequate blood pressure to perfuse the kidneys.
Right. So it's not established what the cause of the kidney problems is, just that there seems to be a statistical relationship between ACE inhibitors and kidney problems.
Yes, there is a relationship between ACE inhibitors and kidney problems.
It's statistical at this point rather than causal. We know that the two coexist, and it seems like the ACE inhibitors are involved in the kidney problems, but we don't know how.
No, I think there's pretty good evidence to suggest that there can be a causal relationship between the use of ACE inhibitors and worsening kidney function. However, in general, the side effect is a problem when the kidney function is bad to begin with.
I see.
And so if the kidney function is reasonably good before at baseline, before the ACE inhibitors are started,
right,
in general, it doesn't worsen, you know, significantly after the ACE inhibitors have been started.
Okay. Are you against prescribing it for elderly patients who might already have kidney problems then?
You know, as with many other things, it's, you know, the kidney function is not a black and white one.
Right.
In general, you know, as long as the kidney function is not severely reduced,
right,
the guidelines would recommend initially giving a trial of ACE inhibitors to make sure to see if, you know, if it is tolerated.
All right.
And so even though there may be some mild abnormality in renal function at baseline, these drugs, the ACE inhibitors, you know, the guidelines would recommend trying them. In our study, we looked at patients who had good kidney function or no significant abnormality of kidney function at baseline.
Right.
And when we did the analyses accounting for eliminating patients with poor kidney function, we found that it wasn't the kidney function by itself that explained the risk treatment paradox for ACE inhibitors.
Okay. And if low blood pressure is an indicator for kidney problems with ACE inhibitors, it's also an indicator for potential kidney problems with beta blockers as well, because as you mentioned, they both lower blood pressure.
Yes, it could be. The low blood pressure could also be a potential consideration for beta blockers. Additionally, in the analysis, we also excluded, you know, we did the analyses removing patients' blood pressures that could be considered low. So
right,
even when we looked at individuals who had good blood pressure, no evidence of reduced, you know, blood pressure at baseline, there was an effect of the risk treatment mismatch,
right,
remained present. So the blood pressure didn't explain the observations completely as well.
I see. I take it you were surprised, nevertheless, by the results of the study.
Yes, we were surprised by the extent of the mismatch, and I think it confirmed to us that some of the higher risk patients weren't receiving the treatment, and so the observations that had been seen, that had been noted with heart attacks, that higher risk heart attack patients, i.e. older heart attack patients, weren't receiving invasive therapies or thrombolytic drugs, that also was evident in heart failure patients. So it was a little more concerning to us in heart failure because most of the heart failure patients are elderly.
Right.
About over 80% of heart failure patients in Canada are over the age of 65.
And now we'll take a short break.
Well, it's a 1 for the morning, 2 for the show, 3 to get ready. Now go, get go, don't step on my loose range. Well, you can do anything, be hot for them. Down, tread on my face, signing my name all over the place. Do anything that you want to do, honey, lay off of them shoes, don't you? Put my boots with you. You can do anything, lay off of them boots with you.
And now, return to our interview.
What's this relationship with drug treatment for thrombolytic condition?
Older patients, there's a literature which has been published looking at invasive procedures and thrombolytic drugs, both of which potentially have adverse effects in the elderly. But despite that, the elderly are at the highest risk of having an adverse outcome after a heart attack.
Right.
And in those studies, older individuals did not receive, were less likely to undergo invasive cardiac procedures or receive thrombolytic therapy.
All right. And I take it that you've, in our discussion, you've mentioned that you're now involved in consideration of clarifying the reasons for this discrepancy in treatment that you found, but that you expect it will take quite some time even to come up with valid hypotheses, and then there'll be time to prove it.
Yes, our future research directions will have to look at trying to identify why this mismatch between risk and treatment exists. And that will probably be a more involved process where we'll have to try to explore other physician or hospital-related factors that might potentially be involved in this, this mismatch between risk and treatment.
Well, I know you can't count on the outcome of a study that hasn't yet taken place, but do you think for your new study, you would consider the possibility of subtle triaging of older patients to less aggressive or less privileged treatment? Age discrimination, in other words.
Because age is such an important factor in risk, we will indirectly probably be looking at age as one of the components of risk. I think there's interest in looking at treatments of elderly patients or, you know, patients through the spectrum of age,
right?
And particularly for heart failure, and that will certainly be an area that we will continue to investigate.
So the possibility that patients are not getting this treatment simply because they're old?
Correct. We are aiming to try to get at the underlying issues, that the reasons that explain lower treatment rates in higher risk patients. If we find that age is a major driver in future research, then certainly that will be an area that we will look at further.
There's been some high profile studies and results lately where people with unflattering political results of medical studies have come under fire for their funding. Is that an outcome that threatens your study potentially, with controversial condition under study and potentially controversial results?
We luckily not been too affected by controversies with any funding agencies.
Well, the studies sound very thorough, and I guess your choice of funding agencies would play a role in the effect of funding on outcomes.
Yeah, we've our research has been funded by the Canadian Institutes of Health Research and the Heart and Stroke Foundation.
Okay.
In general, these agencies have been very supportive.
Good.
Of the work that we do. Hopefully they will continue to in the future.
Somebody struggling with the issues of this kind of treatment, do you have any advice for them to take to their doctor or to their pharmacist when they're saying, you know, is this kind of treatment for me? Is it being unreasonably withheld? Should I aggressively pursue it? Or in your view, are these questions that it's their doctor's obligation to pursue?
No, I'm very much for a proactive role on the behalf of patients and by the patients themselves. Family members and the patients themselves, I feel, should, you know, be involved in their health care,
right,
and in the decision-making processes. Often we involve patients in a decision-making process, for example, for consent for a certain procedure,
right,
for example. And this looks at the involvement of patients and their families in healthcare from another perspective, and that is that the patient and the family should, I feel, be kind of looking at their healthcare, the medications that they or a loved one are receiving, and there are certain standards of therapy now out there for heart failure patients. And if one is not receiving a beta blocker or an ACE inhibitor, it certainly does not hurt to inquire of the physician.
Okay. Is there anything you would like to say before we conclude the interview?
Not really.
Well, I appreciate your time with me today to explain this apparent oddity in treatment regimens. And I applaud your decision to go forward and find out why this is taking place.
Thank you.
All right. Nice talking to you.
Okay.
Bye-bye.
Okay. Bye-bye.
by John Lennon. You heard Blue Suede Shoes from Carl Perkins and Friends, and Slippin' and Slidin' from John's own album, Rock and Roll. Next week, Brian Wood will be back. Some of the people who've offered to help him have been hard to get a hold of. He'll tell us how he feels. Disrespect is looking for the names of politicians who are friendly to people with disabilities and supportive of their goals. You can send us this information at radio.stories@gmail.com. radio.stories@gmail.com. And we'd also like to hear what you want to hear on Disrespect related to disability, discrimination, and equity. radio.stories@gmail.com. If you're interested in the show, you think you might learn how to do digital editing, send us your name and your email. Again, radio.stories@gmail.com. We're looking for a volunteer editor. Disrespect will be back next week. The show is digitally edited from live telephone and studio interviews.